Welcome to the official podcast of PHP Architect. Join us to listen to the latest news and tech talk from our conferences, the magazine, and wider PHP community.
This would help.
I'm Eric, this is John.
Hello.
And you're listening to and or watching the PHP podcast, the official podcast of PHP Architect. We stream live every week around this time, Thursday, 3 p.m. Pacific time. And you too can be part of that show by joining us in our PHP Architect Discord at discord.phparch.com. That's discord.phparch.com. Hop in there, suggest show titles, have conversation with us while we're recording, and just hang out all week long. Fantastic community of PHP developers and some really nice people as well. We would like to thank Honey Badger for jumping back on board with us and sponsoring or being a sponsor of this podcast, as well as a advertiser in the magazine. And if you've hung out with us before in our other podcasts, you'll know what that's about. But yeah, Honey Badger is a great product. We use it here at PHP Architect. We recommend it to all of our clients, and we stand behind them, and we're happy they stand behind us. So thank you, Pete. Thank you, Honey Badger. I appreciate that.
Whoops.
Let's see. I know I missed something last week, and I forgot what it was, and now I feel like I'm missing something again.
The you're listening to PHP podcast version 2024.12.12. How about that?
That works. Is it 12.12? Man, the end of the year is already here. That's so weird. Oh, man. And then, boy, we're making some waves, man. Things are happening with tech. Boy, this is the most exciting part of tech for me, personally.
It is, and it's also the most stressful part.
I'm not stressed yet.
Not most.
Yeah, I get stressed like after this when we need money and we need sponsorship. So yeah, that gets me says this is fun. It's like, oh, look at all these great talks, this is awesome. I hope they accept their invite and
just to be clear, invites have not gone out yet.
No,
we're excited to be sending them hopefully soon, but nothing's gone out yet. I don't know when they will. If it's
your first time joining us, that's what I forgot to mention. We are PHP Architect. We're a magazine that focuses on the PHP programming language, and the magazine, the surrounding PHP community, which is a great community, and what we're talking about right now, our conference, PHP Tech, which we hold every year in the Chicago area. 2025 will be in May, and it's just exciting. It's a fun time. So much
20th through the 22nd.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so much work. I don't know why we do it every year. It's like a manic depressive, you know, like you're like have these super lows and super highs. That's how I feel like when we're working on the conference. It's like there are these super highs and these not super lows, but just super stressed, you know. It doesn't really get low, but it's just like, oh my god, I hope this comes together. And there's just so many factors. So yeah. PHP Tech 2025 happening, and we have gotten through the first round of deciding on what talks interest people. We do that by inviting our community, that's you, to evaluate the talks. Everybody gets to see them. They don't see who contributed them. They just see the titles and the descriptions and pick what talks would interest them. That has passed. We're done that. If you're interested in doing it with us, stick around for next year, and you're more than welcome to join us. That's the thing about the PHP community. It is a community, and we like to keep it that way. We try not to work too much in a silo, but at some point, you know, we do have to get in our little silos to, you know, give like some sort of surprise to people. So that's where we're at now. So everybody got to pick the talks. We're kind of whittling it down, seeing what makes sense, you know, doing all the logistics as far as like figuring out getting people here. Then we'll publish. That's the fun part.
So if you're going to get a ticket, get it now.
That's the key. We're running right now. We call it the Blind Early Bird Special. The reason it's called Blind Early Bird Special is because you're just basically buying a ticket off the reputation of the conference. You know it's a good conference. You've been there before. You've talked to people who've been there before. You know you're going to get your value out of it. So you're buying a ticket regardless of the fact that you don't even know who's speaking yet. You just know they're going to be quality speakers because of the history, which they are.
Quality speakers, quality content.
Yeah. So yeah, if you have some end of the year conference budget, education budget, whatever it might be, look at getting your ticket and heading up to Chicago next year and hanging out with us. And look at subscribing to the magazine if you're not a subscriber to the magazine yet. We do try to give away as much free content as we can. It's been really a focus of John and I since taking over PHP Architect, as far as, you know, creating more videos and blog posts and stuff like that. But we do pay our contributors. So again, if you want to make some coin as a PHP developer, or even a web developer, to be quite honest with you, consider contributing to the magazine. We're always taking submissions, a yearly feature article, you know, one article a year. We just need 12 people to write one article a year. Well,
24 people.
We like to have two feature articles. One article a year, and we'll pay you. We'll pay you handsomely. We'll pay $175 if it's fresh content and all that. We can get the details of all that later. But because of that, we do charge for the digital magazine. So that's why there's a subscription for that. It's a nominal fee, we feel. We're playing around with some ideas with that, but it's a small fee. And if you're really hardcore like some of us, there's the print edition. And that's just more of a luxury thing. But I do like getting my magazine in the mail and having it. I usually throw one in my backpack, so no matter where I'm at, I know I always have one with me.
Have something to consume.
Yeah.
Make yourself better.
That's yeah. So how's your week been, John?
It was great up until today. Oh, my goodness. I know I complain about release issues often. That's because the code base I work in gets released Wednesday night. So Thursday mornings, when things go wrong, can be very stressful. And this morning was stressful. Let's put it that way. I do a lot of work on phone systems. So when I have to release code, I have to do it late at night when we recycle the phone servers. We basically shut them all down, bring one or two up, and then slowly scale them in before the morning. You know, no reason to keep them running all night when we don't have people using them. So I'm up last night releasing code, been working on this big feature, and I have to release the two code bases at once, the web servers and then the phone systems. And they have to work in tandem. Stay up after 11, code goes live, I do some testing, and of course, there's issues because of reasons, and I want to just rage on that. The web servers, I don't know why. I'm working with the ops team now. The web servers can't talk to the phone servers over the AWS private network. And I don't know what's going on there. I haven't looked into it. So I simply said, okay, switch, work over to the public IPs. We're good. But then I go to bed, don't think anything of it, and get woken up at 6 a.m. So I go to bed at 1 a.m., get woken up at 6 a.m. with an alert of there's issues, and I immediately just like want to break down because I hate when I work on a big feature and it has to be reverted because there's issues. And then it hits me. Oh, I only deployed to one of the three environments. So I jump on, I'm like, it's no big deal. I screwed up. I forgot to deploy to these two environments. Let me deploy and I'm done. I walk away for about 5 minutes and come back to, yeah, nobody can hear people on the phone. Or actually, our users are calling people and those people cannot hear the user. I'm like, nothing I did touched that. So I'm freaking out trying to get people involved. And lo and behold, it wasn't my code. So I was super happy. It was actually a JavaScript library upgrade. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if there's been anyone looking into it today, but that was it. They upgraded this background filter that's supposed to, you know, take out some background noise. and it took out all noise.
These users just don't want to hear you talk.
It worked.
It worked a little too well.
Yeah.
So yeah, that kind of stress is not fun when you don't know what's happening, and basically the business seems down, even though, you know, we have some great customer service people that realize pretty quickly, oh, it's only if you use a soft phone. If you dial in on a regular phone or a cell phone, everything was working. So we're like, okay.
Oh,
so
that's interesting. You didn't tell me that earlier.
Yeah. So the way the software works is you dial into our servers and then we make the calls for you, and you basically just keep one connection, and then we'll say, dial Eric. When you answer, I talk to you. If you don't answer, I leave you a message and I move on to the next person. But I only have that one connection. But you can do it through your computer, which is super convenient, or a phone. And it was the soft phone that was broken.
Yeah, cool.
Nelson, it's Sioma. Nice to have you in our Discord.
I was about to say, Nelson's in our Discord, and
he is an author, contributor to November's PHP Architect magazine.
Yeah.
On so serverless architecture.
He actually has a Community Corner interview. It's up on our website now. He has a Community Corner interview by Scott. I haven't watched it yet. I just got it published the other day.
I did. So yeah. It was really good. Nelson, you did a great job on there.
Yeah. I like serverless. I got to get back into serverless a little bit. I have kind of went away from it a little while. It's just because, I mean, it's cool and everything. It's just, I don't have that much time to manage it.
I also think it was the one application you tried to deploy serverless was not appropriate for it. So our bill went whoop.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about the WordPress site?
Yeah, it was SDPHP, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That was back. Yeah, that was way back in the day. Yeah. No. I definitely think, my thing about serverless, and Nelson might touch on this, is that initial spin up, like if you're that first request, just seems painfully slow. Like, oh my God, I know I'm the first request, but God, get up already. Let's go, you know? So yeah, I need to look at getting an implementation going that is worth it. Like it actually saves money. We have I keep going back to a customer that we have where they're starting to roll out public APIs, but they have not historically been an API driven application.
Company. Yeah.
Yeah. So I keep thinking, okay, well, this is probably a great way to use serverless because, yeah, I'll just have the API endpoints live on a server that spins up whenever somebody needs an API. And then I'm like, well, I mean, the actual application is already on like a beast of an EC2 instance, like a massive load balanced multiple servers. It's like, why wouldn't I just keep it on that? Like, correct. It's already there running, you know?
Exactly.
So every time I think I have a use case for serverless architecture, I talk myself out of it. And I have yet to hit that sweet spot where I'm like, oh yeah, this is what I need it for.
The client that I work on actually uses a little bit of serverless. I'm not involved in it, but their use case is interesting. And I'm sure I can't say a whole lot because of proprietary information, but their usage is, Nelson touched on it in his call with Scott in that video. It's dropping a file into S3, which kicks off a process to process the file and gather data and do a lot more work on it. Mm-hmm. Actually, that was the client's first delve into machine learning too. So it all starts with this image, kicking off a process, working, doing some machine learning stuff. It's really kind of wild.
But I mean, yeah, I get it. And it does sound like a good use case for it, but like, they don't have another server they can put that on? Like, they don't already have something out there running?
Not really, because it's not part of the code base at all. Like,
it's completely separate.
Yeah, it's not like it's hitting the serverless application that has to phone home. It's just doing its own thing, and it's just completely separate.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess that would be a good, and the argument could be made, you know, for security as well, right? Mm-hmm. You don't, if they don't need to hit your server that hosts the core application on it, then don't let them hit the server.
Right.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that does seem like a good use case. Still don't know if I have one or not.
Right. But you brought just, up good.
No, you go.
You were bringing up the other client that has beefy servers and it's all load balanced. Happen to see an article, you know, 8 types of load balancing. Mm-hmm. And there's actually another article I didn't include in here, vertical versus horizontal scaling, which kind of mm-hmm. goes along that same line of thinking.
Yeah.
And that client you're talking about, it's like so overkill. They want these massive servers and we keep telling them you don't need these.
Mm-hmm.
And they also want lots of them running at the same time, even though we say we have auto scaling.
Right. That's the key piece of it. It's not that they don't need it. It's we keep telling them if you need it, they will be there. Like they will spin up more servers for you. Yeah.
We need to figure out the issue that they had. Where now in the back of their mind they're like, no, we have to have all these servers running right away.
Yeah.
I think it might be, you know, we tend to spin them up at a certain time. And there was one time where they had something went on sale, like right when the servers were coming up. So they weren't up and ready yet. So we just, I was like, okay, let's back that down. We just need them to come up a little bit sooner so that they don't get stampeded.
Yeah. I mean, I'm torn on it. The first reason why I don't care that much about it because they pay the bill and they don't complain about the bill they pay. Like they're not coming to us saying, hey, our AWS bill is through the roof. We need to scale it back. That would be a different conversation, but they don't do that. The other thing is, you know, their entire business, the only way they make money is online. So I get like they just want the end user's experience to be as smooth in this buttery as possible. And I mean,
then like, let us like rewrite said, a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other thing. It's like, let's see, we can spend that money on rewriting better, more efficient code, or we can just keep running the crappy code just on bigger servers. Let's go that way. That seems easier.
And when we say this, we took this application over and there are, what is it? Monsters in the closets, ghosts, whatever. Yeah, there's issues that we want to tackle, but we don't want to tackle because you're going to pull that string and then it's not going to stop. And 3 years later, you're still going to be rewriting this stuff and they'll complain.
And again, to the defense of the code base itself, it's old. It's an old monolith code that was probably originally written early 5, if not 4 days. We didn't handle it back then, but by the time we took it over, it was definitely in 5. But we've nursed it along. We have been, you know, modifying it, upgrading it, and it's on PHP 8 now. And Laravel, we the thing that makes me the most nervous is how we introduced Laravel into it. So initially, the idea was, okay, we'll just rewrite all this using the Laravel framework. And this was even back in the day when Laravel was iterating very quickly and you were doing like an upgrade every 6 months. But then we decided to pull back from that because I really, the size of this app and all the different directions it goes in and all the little areas it has is just massive. So we're like, okay, we're going to introduce Laravel into the code base and start proxying requests to the Laravel code base as we develop the Laravel code base. And so that's what we have. We have this hybrid of this, you know, monolith app, which is technically object oriented. You know, it's not a model view controller, but it has objects. It understands objects and how to use them. And then within that, we have Laravel, which things will go to as we convert stuff. It's worked, and I'm just waiting for the day it doesn't because I feel like it's going to happen because we always have to do this thing where we have to keep that Laravel install up to whatever is out there, which is what we're doing. And but we do a bunch of customization to handle the routing of the request. Not a whole bunch, but we do touch some files to do this routing customization. And I'm just waiting for that to stop working for some reason.
That was stemmed from an article I wrote for PHP Architect well before we owned it. And it was wrapping your legacy code in a Laravel blanket or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, back in the day. Oh, yeah, I forgot you'd written that article. Wow. Oh, man.
Now I want to find it, but I don't have the patience.
I mean, I still feel like that's if you're dealing with legacy code bases, especially monoliths that aren't easy to shut down and rewrite and spin back up, I'm totally on board with this approach we took. Just wish there was like an easier way of handling it, a nicer way. More eloquent way of handling it where you didn't have to touch as many files, but yeah, good stuff. So I've decided, I talked last week, I think it was, I mentioned we have a new developer on the team. He's a mobile developer. He's working on our Ionic applications that we have. We have a few out there for customers, and then we created some apps for PHP Tech as well, our vendor app. And maybe possibly a attendees app next year. We mentioned it and then haven't really flushed it out yet. But we have a few mobile apps there. And because he's new to the code bases, specifically the customer code bases, the client code bases, the people who pay us to pay him, I've been getting more involved with it. And like every time I talk to him, I'm like, oh, this is exciting stuff. Like, and I said today, I was on a very long, a couple meetings with him and the client talking about the code, reviewing the code, seeing how it had been implemented. And I'm like, you know, this is it. 2025. I am a long time, not opponent of JavaScript. I think JavaScript is a great tool. I just think it's overused, and I don't like coding with it, mainly because I'm not good. I mean, I'm not good at PHP, but I can fake PHP. I can't even fake it with JavaScript, mainly because when things break, I don't understand how to read the freaking error logs. Like, I don't get it. But that's it. 2025, I'm learning a JavaScript framework, probably Angular, because that's what a lot of our Ionic stuff is based on. But I've been really kind of getting pulled into the React direction. I like a lot of the stuff I see coming out of React. Not so much a Vue. I know Vue.js is huge in the Laravel community, and I think it had its time. And I think those guys do a lot of great work, the Vue development team. But I don't know. It's great. And maybe it will be Vue. I hope, like PHP frameworks, once you understand the principles and concepts around a framework you already know the language, like you already know PHP. It's just a matter of learning the concepts around the framework. I'm hoping JavaScript's the same way. Like as I start to learn more JavaScript, understanding different JavaScript frameworks and moving between them isn't so difficult.
I used to think I knew JavaScript. Like I could get in there and make things work.
Mm-hmm.
But man, when I get into a well-written, what I assume is well-written, I can't understand it. It's like, I don't know how all the things are connected.
That's me. Like, how does this get to there? Like, I don't get it. Like, where's that connection being made?
Right. Yeah. It's like, this thing has to be spun up somewhere. And all anyone ever tells me is, oh, it's mounted when the page, I'm like, mounted? What do you mean mounted where? Like, how does data get from my application into the objects that are using them?
Yeah. Yeah. It will be a cold day in hell that I would ever call myself a JavaScript developer of any sort.
Don't say that, because you used to say that about yourself being a PHP developer, and look at you now.
Not even true, man. I never thought I would do it professionally. I would say that, but yeah. No, I've been loving PHP for for years. Yeah, I don't know, man. I need to. We were talking about it. John and I had lunch with a client this week, and it was funny because I had just been thinking about it, and this topic was brought up around the launch of pivoting your career. And I'm not young anymore. And I had just been going through it in my head of all the major career pivots I had made. And I don't really regret any of them. The only thing I kind of regret about them is the longer you stick with a profession, you know, the more advanced you are in that field. Mm-hmm. And so when I say I made career pivots, I made like I'm not doing anything close to what I had originally did, you know, coming, you know, my first real job sort of thing. But I don't regret any of it, and I appreciate it. And I've always made really good friends wherever I was, whatever, either wastewater, water purification, you know, SysOps, like all the stuff. But that's it. Like, I can't pivot anymore. I'm not young anymore. I don't have the time to build up my reputation in another career, another field. Like, this has to work. If this doesn't work, I'm screwed. So I had a slight moment of panic. Hey, Paul.
Hey, I like the little JS joke. I like it.
Yeah, I promise you, JS is harder to learn. That's funny. That's
promises great. Promises are no joke. I'm trying to follow those too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the thing that always throws me is that the idea of a promise. And I don't know, man. I'll get it. I'll get there.
Yep. Eventually.
So, you know what? Let's take a moment since we do have our wonderful sponsor this year. We're gonna play an ad. For Honey Badger, and let's just see how well this goes, and we might have some explaining to do.
Splunk like querying without having to sell my kidneys? Nice. That's a direct quote from someone who just saw Honey Badger Insights, the new observability tool from the folks at honeybadger.io. Insights is a fresh approach to logging, performance monitoring, and observability. It's a bit like Splunk, Datadog, or CloudWatch Log, but with just the good parts and a reasonable price tag. Honey Badger helps you gain deeper visibility into what's happening inside your applications, letting you drill down into the details and step back to see patterns in your data. You'll love how easy it is to query your logs and events and create quick charts and dashboards. The best part is that it's available on Honey Badger's free tier as part of their comprehensive monitoring suite, which includes error tracking, uptime monitoring, status pages, and more. Get started for free, then pay as you grow, or choose a 30-day free trial to unlock the full power of Honey Badger right away. To get started, visit honeybadger.io/plans. That's honeybadger.io/plans.
Oh, thank you, good to me.
Honey Badger.
Nothing to explain there at all. That was good. I forgot. I had actually coded towards that. I don't know what's going on with your camera, if it's just my side, but you are pixelated. So for your audio listeners, if you're listening to the audio podcast, just imagine a very pixelated John face right now.
Yep. It's pixelated on YouTube too, so good.
Yeah.
Let me try this.
But I was doing some coding. Every now and then I do some coding for our customers. My development team lets me accept one of my pull requests. And I had forgotten that the Honey Badger stuff, I did a bunch of coding where instead of just catching the errors, I was logging the errors to the Honey Badger so that I could try that new service, which I have yet to do. I had forgotten all about it until our little ad ran. I'm like, oh, I need to go see if that's actually working. That would be kind of cool. Oh, yeah. And if you don't know, there are Honey Badger packages for PHP, and I believe even Laravel-specific Honey Badger packages. If you're a Laravel person, maybe even Symfony, too. I don't remember, but very specific packages for PHP and its frameworks. There you go. You look better. John.
I'm wondering why you even need a specific package, because it's very easy to spin it up.
Yeah, I think they just I could be wrong. And we even know the person who wrote the package for Honey Badger, the Laravel package. I think that was TJ Miller that did that. I think it's just a wrapper. They just add some facades to it. It's not like you can't use the you can use the generic one. It's just more of the Laravel conventions.
It probably also automates getting your service provider and configuration rather than you having to figure out how you're going to spin it up within the app yourself.
Yeah. Yep. Cool stuff, man.
Each code base has, or each framework has its own way of getting that stuff in there.
Yeah. Yeah, true. If you are in the Laravel community, or if you're new to the Laravel community, welcome. We can be found on pretty much all the social networks now, both myself and John, as well as PHP Architect. I made a decision. So look at the website, or look at the show notes. If you need the show notes, they'll be on the blog post for the podcast. I say that because I'm no longer going to all the different like YouTube channels and copying the show notes.
Well, now we just have the one.
That's true. But so listen, we're on Twitter, PHP Arch. We're on Mastodon, PHP Arch at phparch.social, and we're on Blue Sky, phparch.com is our handle on Blue Sky, which is cool. You don't have to do the whole PHP, like my personal is ericvanjohnson.bluesky.social or whatever their long username is. So yeah, we're all over the place. You know, come hang out with us. Of course, we already mentioned our Discord channel, but let's talk user groups for a moment. So John and I keep playing with the idea of getting our local user group going. As a matter of fact, that's how John and I met, is through our local user group. John had started it up again when he moved out to San Diego, and we've been talking about it. But if you don't have a user group in your area, and there's an old saying from a very old wise PHP person, Cal Ancient Man Evans, says, if you don't have a user group in your local area, congratulations. You're now the organizer of your local PHP user group. But there's also another option out there. It's Merge PHP. And as luck would have it, Merge PHP is having their meeting today. So basically, Merge came out of COVID, where a bunch of local user groups, SDPHP is credited as one of them as well, got together and started hosting meetups virtually. So these groups still meet in person. The ones that do meet still meet in person. I think Atlanta PHP has started meeting in person again. I could be wrong on that. But they also hold a virtual one. So there is a meetup today for Merge PHP. It follows this show. So you could actually have two wonderful hours of PHP knowledge pouring into your skull cap. Now, we'll put that, if you're in our Discord, I'll move that over. John's moved it over. No, Eric's moved it over. It'll show up in our Discord channel. If you're listening to the audio stream later, sorry, you missed out. But if you're watching it on YouTube, just Google Merge PHP and I'm sure you'll find it.
And today's being done by our very own Eric Mann.
Eric Mann, a writer for PHP Architect. I think that's probably the real reason why I was trying to pimp it a little bit. So yeah, cool. So check them out. Oh, there's all the, so these are all the kind of official parts of Merge PHP, the organizers who got together and did it. So yeah, check it out. That's all I got.
So are we going to do it again? Are we going to try and start it up in January?
You know, I have a soft spot in my heart for user groups, man.
I know. We kept it kind of far north the last time we tried it because you're so far north. Do you really want to come down all this
way? You know, it doesn't bother me. I I'll make it happen. I'm not a puss like some people. Like, oh, it's too far. I can't go that far. I'm not going to call out names, John. I'm just saying in general, John. But yeah, I don't care about that. I'll make that happen. It's just, I think everybody's gotten comfortable not doing it. And I think a lot of people have forgotten how beneficial it is. Back in the day, I would almost never talk to anybody who would be like, oh yeah, no, these are such a waste of time. I don't know why I do it. Yeah, it's like, it's always something. So I don't know. It's so hard because it's like you got to find a place who's willing to host you. Then you got to find speakers. And yeah, it's a lot. Like for you organizers out there of user groups, you guys, you people, you just don't get enough credit. It's not it's not easy, you know.
Yeah,
it's work. So yes, I would like to. I would like to do it again.
Let's do the same thing we did last time. We'll do it at that pizza place, you know, kind of commandeer the upstairs and see who shows up and converse from there.
See, I think that sends a bad message, because I think what you have is, and this is just my personal thought on it, is I think you get people showing up who think they're just going to get free food, which could be true. Like when we hosted the user groups before, we would get food sponsors. People, you know, organizations would, or people would buy us, vendors would buy food for the meetup. And I think when we do it at a place like that, I think just people walk there expecting to be fed, which is, I would. Like if I was going to a meetup at a pizza joint, I would expect there would be pizza there. So I don't know. I think we did that the last time and we got such a good turnout, and then nobody turned out after that. We can talk about it. I'm not saying no, hard no. I'm just saying we should discuss it.
All right. Did you follow any of the conversation in Discord the past couple of days?
I have not. I'm a terrible Discord person.
A Woods started this conversation, so I'll link to it in the show notes. But first of all, he shared a video from Uncle Bob. And for some reason, Uncle Bob he's a polarizing person for some reason. I don't know why. Yes.
Well, he talked a lot of shit about, the one time I saw him talk in person, he talked a lot of shit about PHP. He thought he was being funny. He wasn't.
See, I wasn't there for that.
No. The shift guy was sitting next to me. He just like patting me on my arm. Easy, big fella. Easy.
What were you doing?
Like, who the fuck this guy is? What the fuck is it? Yeah. I guess I was making more grunting noises than I thought. Like, I didn't realize they were so audible, but I don't hide my emotion really very
no,
well.
No, you
like,
do not.
If I get mad, you know I'm mad. Like, there's really no... People can interpret. I've been told I have resting anger face, so that is a thing, but you don't know anger until you see anger from me, and then you understand, you won't mistake it.
When you unleash on the people that pay us, I'm like, no, stop! Please stop!
Yeah, that's happened a few times.
Gentle touch with people that pay you money.
No, no, not me.
When you tell them, stop talking, I'm trying to talk here. It's
like, that's right. And everybody should understand. If I'm talking, everybody should stop talking. I don't understand why that's so hard for you to get your head around, John. Okay, I'm sorry. I distracted you.
Uncle Bob. It's all right. So he shared a video from Uncle Bob. It was all about ethics in coding.
Ooh,
and how do we ethics guy. Well, then it spurred on a great conversation within the Discord channel of all sorts of input from like Larry Garfield and Danger Casey. And I remember going back, I want to say 2014-ish, 2015-ish, there was a big push for a similar thing, being an ethical developer. Mm-hmm. And we all signed almost like a pledge on GitHub, where you went and opened a pull request, adding your name to there saying, you know, I'm going to be an ethical developer. But the conversation went way deeper in our Discord channel about how, one, it's really hard to enforce, because there's nobody saying if you make bad ethical choices, you can no longer code.
Right,
you know, as a doctor, if you do something unethical, they take your medical license away. And if you get caught practicing, you go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that same thing.
Not yet.
But, but within there, they talked about, you know, there's already a bunch of different code of ethics out there, which also makes it hard when you have competing standards. Mm-hmm. And none of them are enforceable anyway. But it's still interesting. It's an interesting conversation to have, something to think about. And what do you do if you have a job and your boss asks you to do something that you don't feel is ethical?
Yeah.
And, you know, people are saying, well, you quit. And it's like, No, you. That's not. It's not always that easy. Some people.
Yeah, easier said than done. Yeah.
Like, no, I need my job. So.
Yeah.
It's really hard. And
it can be, and there are different levels of ethics, right? And it can be a very deep conversation. I think we've talked in the past about the whole, you know, will we get to a time where you do have to have some sort of license or certification to be a developer, you know? Like, you can say, well, no, because you can always code. Well, yeah, I can always cut into somebody, too. It doesn't make me a doctor. Like, to be a professional doctor, you know, I have to adhere to certain standards. And I think the same thing, I could see the same thing happening with coding, where it's like, okay, if you want to be a professional coder, if you want to work for a legitimate company that hires professional coders, this is what it's going to require. And I think what's driving us there are things like AI, right? Because we're no longer talking about, well, what if you write code that, you know, launches a missile, you know, and you know, what are your ethics on that? And there's an argument that could be made on that, but deeper than that, it's like things like AI, and you know, and then when we get to things like quantum computing, where you're just like doing all this stuff at, you know, crazy, like things we thought we'd never be able to accomplish, we'll be able to accomplish with quantum computing, and you know, in minutes, which we had thought would take decades to accomplish before. And I definitely could see getting to a stage. I mean, I'm sure to a degree we're probably there. I'm sure there are government positions in development where it's like, oh yeah, you can't be at this position unless you have, you know, CS degree and, you know, some sort of certification. But I don't know, man. I struggle with ethics in our industry a lot. And this goes on, right? I mean, we have friends who work in the adult entertainment industry who, you know, we've helped with development. And that's an ethical conundrum for people. You know, depending on what side of the fence you're on it, you know, either you have a problem with it or you don't have a problem with it. But, you know, that is an ethical conversation to have. But we're not talking about, like, developing AI that will decide who lives and who dies sort of thing. You know what I mean? So I feel like we are approaching that world where there are going to be tiers of our industry that are going to require some sort of,
but that becomes a problem though, of there also has to be some sort of, like, you company that want to do something unethical, you can't hire Joe Blow up the street that doesn't adhere to our ethics. Like, there's got to be some sort of punishment for them trying to hire, almost like a hospital hiring a doctor that doesn't have a license, right?
Right.
It can't be allowed. It's got to be more than just that developer gets in trouble. If you're hiring somebody, you also have to have some sort of part in that.
McNeely says he turned down a position at Pornhub writing PHP. First thing, Pornhub is PHP. That's interesting. Second thing, yeah, I mean, again, that was your own personal thing. And again, I don't know you. I don't know what you did, but, like, I assume you had a job at the time. You weren't, you know, weren't sitting at home with kids' mouths to feed and trying to figure out how you're going to do it. So I don't judge people who do it. I have adult entertainment. I have very strict guidelines around, but yeah, I don't have an issue with that. But yeah, to your point, John, I agree, right? And I think that's what's going to happen. The issue is, so I always equate it back to medical, right? Doctors, like there's anybody can call themselves a therapist and you know, talk to you about your feelings and your, you know, but they can't be you know, a psychiatrist. They can't have a degree saying they're a psychiatrist or represent themselves as having some sort of degree from a college or something. I just feel like that's where we're going to be. Like, yeah, you're always going to have the mob who hires somebody to remove a bullet from somebody and not care what they have. The thing is to your point, there has to be punishment to the legitimate companies who are trying to participate in the world who do that, right? And it's just, where's that, you know, who gets to decide what that line is? And yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's I'm glad I'm here now, because I think in 50 years from now, it's going to be, the landscape's going to be completely different. And like my kids' kids are going to be like, oh yeah, my granddad used to be a developer. He just bought a computer from a store and started coding. It was crazy. He put shit on the internet and shit was there. And like, there was nothing stopping him from doing it. I'll be like, yeah, that was me. You know, old moonshine Eric, they called me. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I feel like it's got to get there. It's got to get there. Like, you look at industries, you understand, like, why, you know, there hasn't been, like, this ethics-driven industry like there is in the medical field. But I think IT is getting there. It's going to happen quickly.
Not in our lifetime.
No, I'm good. Yeah, we had, speaking of quantum computing and customers, clients, specifically the one John was referring to, where myself and the owner of our client's owner, would lock horns in the past. And it's because we're both very passionate, very forward-thinking people. So we actually had a conversation today about IDs, and I've been on the bandwagon. I hardly call it a bandwagon, but I've been on the UUID bandwagon for years, and trying to push UUIDs and get rid of, because again, our client, like so many people out there, would depend on whatever self-incrementing ID their database creates for a record in a database table to become a ID for an entity like a user or you know, company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh yeah, oh, by the way, you know, we had to rewrite the database and everybody's ID got mixed up. Ah, we got to figure this out now. You know, why UUIDs should have been the way to go years ago. So we were having a conversation about timestamps and how, I forget the details, but I got to geek out with him and he appreciates it when I geek out. And I was telling him, you know, timestamps are not a stamp of year, month, day, hour. Timestamps are milliseconds since a point in time. And I forget what that point in time was. I keep going back to 72, but I don't know if that's what it was.
1970.
Yeah. And eventually that is going to run out. I think it runs out in 2034, mm-hmm. 38, somewhere.
No, I think you're at 34.
Yeah. So that time, our timestamp is going to run out. I'm like, yeah, this is a bigger deal than Y2K. And nobody's talking about it because, again, like Y2K, we think it's so far out, but it's going to be here. And we're going to run out of digits. And we're going to run out of timestamps and blah, blah, blah. Because they have a lot of clients that are like, oh yeah, our ID can't be any longer than that. This, which, you know, it's like, well, they're going to have to be longer than that at some point because there are only so many numbers in this long of a sequence. And so we got to geek out on that in UUIDs and, you know, talking about UUIDs and how what I started doing. So I used to be very kind of hardcore, like, okay, that's it. We're going to convert our IDs to UUIDs. And I tried to force that into even the projects I worked on and discovered, yeah, that's the wrong way to go. That's the wrong way to go. Like, there's too many third-party packages that make the assumption of what the ID is and all that. So I started adding a UUID column to everything. And I tell the team that, hey, if we're referencing a table that has a UUID column, that's the ID that represents that entity. Like, I don't care what the ID column says. We, for our internal use, that's the ID we use. And we've been doing that. It's been working. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, this guy's like, you know what we should do? Okay, what we should do is where we can't change the ID, let's just create another column in the table. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, we've been doing that. He goes, what? That's all. See, that's what I'm talking about. In the future-proofing stuff. So, and then that let us down. So he's a character. I love this guy because, you know, he starts talking about, he gets into tech and he brings up quantum computing. And of course, this has been a buzzword for me for a while. I get really excited about quantum computing. It makes me want to go back and get a computer science degree because I just love the area of quantum computing and what we're going to be able to do with it. But he starts talking about quantum computing. It was just fantastic geeking out with the guy and talking about what we're going to be able to accomplish here, you know, in a very short amount of time. He was talking, I guess Google just released a chip, and I actually have a Trello card for this. Let me share this. I wasn't going to talk about it because I didn't get around to reading it today. We just had this conversation today. But according to him, Google just released its quantum chip, which has some like error handling in it that has been like an issue in the realm of quantum computing, like how to handle these scenarios of errors. And he was all excited about it, so I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta try to read that before the show today, and I never got around to it. I'll add it to the show notes for anybody who's interested. But yeah, quantum computing, man, it's gonna be so much fun. And he was trying to explain to me, he goes, you understand, like in quantum computing, like we live in a world that's a zero or one, but that's not how quantum computing works. Like, yeah, dude, I know. I understand what it is, man.
You brought up date times and timestamps. What kind of field do you mainly use when you're creating a database? A column in a database.
For timestamps?
Yeah.
Daytime. Yeah.
So we have somebody pushing really hard that don't use daytime. You should be using a timestamp column, because the timestamp column takes into account the time zone as well.
Right. That's true.
Where the daytime doesn't. So a daytime column you should only be using for something that's not time zone sensitive. And he's very adamant about it, to the point where you open a pull request and if he sees it, he's like, why'd you choose that over timestamp? It's like, because that's what I've always done. I'm sorry. Don't hit me.
So wait a minute. So you're saying date time does not take in consideration time zone? Mm-mm. What am I using on PHP Tech TV then? Now you have me questioning my life's decisions, because I'm pretty sure. Basically, what is Laravel's default, right? That would
it's
be.
Not, it's not going to be. It's not going to be Laravel's default. It's going to be. No? It's going to be your database server and PHP itself.
No, Laravel's default is. What do you mean the database server? So in Laravel's default, the created at and updated at are timestamps.
Right. That's the way it should be. Yeah. Now I'm saying, when you put a time into the database, it's going to be based on the time zone the database is in. But when you're when you're inserting into a date time column, it's going to be whatever you're putting in from PHP, which is just a string, which is going to depend on how you got that information, how you generate, because it could be based on the whatever time zone your PHP server is in versus the database server.
Interesting.
It gets crazy. We have traditionally, when I started 12 years ago with this client, all the servers were in central time in the US. Now the database servers are in UTC, except there is a setting within MySQL that you can say, no, the time zone should be central time, so that all the times make sense.
Right.
So crazy.
I need to see. So the thing that's you messing with my head, man. I don't appreciate it much. So for the conference, for PHP Tech, we use a service that we use to manage our scheduling and in the talks and all that. We actually feed that into our database internally to show up on the website for the conference and for phptech.tv. And the issue is the conference is held in Chicago. And of course we have people all around the world who want to go watch the video and stuff. So I've always had to do this. Well, one of the things I did was said, okay, when I create an event, I'm going to say what time zone that event's in so that whenever I display anything for that event, I'll make sure to set the time zone for the time zone of the event.
Right.
So actually, I guess that doesn't change this conversation, right? Because I would still have to do the thing even with the timestamp, right? Because I still need to set the date time based on the time zone of the event. So that really doesn't change anything. Okay, so I see your argument, and it is something I need to take consideration moving forward. Because again, our client has customers all around the country, and time zones are very important to them. You know, when certain things are written, when there certain things are established. So need to kind of keep that in mind with them as well. That's funny, man. I never really thought that. I never really gave it that much thought of date, time versus timestamp.
Right. Yeah. Either did I. And now I think about it anytime I need a new column and like, damn it. He's right.
Yeah, so Nelson even says, but if you're not storing time zones in your database, does it matter if you use date, time or timestamp? Yeah, that's the issue, right? Like if you're capturing a timestamp, so wait a minute.
So okay, when you do like insert into table and then you say now (), you're going to get the current time with a timestamp of the server that it's on.
Where the server is. Yeah.
Right. Or whatever. Yeah. Whatever it sets you. But then MySQL has that information. So even if you change the time zone of the server in the future, that point in time doesn't change.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So yeah, that's actually less impactful. Yeah, I see what you're saying though. It does make more sense. Yeah. So, and even if you have a time zone defined for the database, like you said, that you guys had, the timestamp itself is still UTC, correct?
Right.
So now what are we going to do there when in 2035 or 4 or whatever?
It's not being stored as an integer. So back in the day, we used an integer column.
Oh, that's true. There's a specific timestamp column.
Right.
Now.
So that's the difference. When he started having this conversation with me, I'm like, but a timestamp is just a number. When I pull it up in the database and then lo and behold, I'm wrong. A timestamp is a normal string when you look at it, when you do your select. I was thinking it was just that time since the epoch, and it's not. So.
Oh, man, you give me something to think about today. I don't appreciate that much, John.
Yeah, he was very clear because we have to deal with daylight savings time and all that, and it's that gets affected because if you don't know how that time is stored, or if it was stored central daylight time and now we're in standard time, it throws everything off an hour and you have to be clear. So timestamp's the way to go. Point in time, not adjustable. Yeah. I mean, not, it's there, we know when it is.
And we're going to wrap up here soon, but I do want to call out Eric Jennings over on X mentioned that, places like software certifications have been around for a while, especially things like Microsoft. We're not saying there's anything wrong with certifications. I support certifications. Matter of fact, I got into IT, like we were talking about career pivots. I career pivoted to a job in IT because I went and got a Microsoft certification. I think those certifications show that you have a vested interest in the industry. And for me, that's what it did. I did a little computer science college, but I dropped out of college after 2 years, didn't get any degrees or anything. And then what, 10 years later, maybe 5 years later, I went and got a Microsoft certification and presented that to a guy I was a mentor who was kind of mentoring me. He said, okay, listen, if you want to get in the industry, go get a certification. So definitely on board for certifications. I think it does speak a lot to how serious and committed you are to the industry. I definitely don't think it's to the tier of ethics, although there are some hardcore certs out there. I know the Cisco certifications are crazy hard to get. So there are some, you know, doctorate level degree certs out there, but yeah, we don't, definitely not knocking certs for sure.
It speaks to your character. If you're going to take the time to learn something new, it shows that you took the time to do it. You took whatever test you needed to. Also, a lot of continuing education in there. It's you're continuing to learn new things. And that's kind of what we preach with user groups and conferences, is we're doing the same thing. We are continuing to build our resumes, ourselves, being better developers, hopefully. And that's kind of where we need, what we need.
Yeah. I think that definitely separates your hacks to your professionals and all that. And yeah, nothing wrong with being a hacker either. If you're out there, you're a hacker, keep hacking, man. If that's what you love, do it. I'm all for it. All right. I feel like that's it. You got anything else you want to touch on?
No, I think that was a good one.
Yes, our way through this one. Yeah, I feel like it. I feel like it. Okay. Thanks again to Honey Badger for coming on board and giving us this little sponsorship money. We do appreciate that. Check out phptech.io for next year's conference and get your tickets today. Seriously, like soon, because John always has to fight me. I don't even want to do early bird pricing anymore. I just want to go straight to, like, this is like how much it costs. So you want to do that. And join us in our Discord. Any questions, comments, complaints, send them to John.
I'm here for him.
To the magazine.
I got a trash can right here.
So subscribe to our YouTube channel and all that other cool subscription stuff. All right, that's it. I'm out. Oh, are we going to try to do that ending again?
I don't know anymore.
I keep forgetting. What is it? Keep coding?
Keep listening. And keep reading.
Reading. Damn it.
Keep writing, too. We need you to write, too.
Write code. See, that's what I like that. Like, write code, write for the magazine. We'll work on that. We're still working out a few kinks. We've only had this podcast for 3 or 4 years, so give us time. All right,
it's been longer than that.
See you next week.
Bye.